AM 570 KLAC, 98.7 KYSR, HD2.
Los Angeles.
Available anywhere using the iHeartRadio app. AM 570, an LA sports icon.
Fred Rogan is here tonight.
Decades on your television covering Los Angeles sports.
Fred Rogan, huge in Los Angeles.
The Dean.
I'm the Dean.
Fred Rogan.
Weekdays before Petros and Money.
A USC All-American.
USC's Rodney Peet.
An NFL quarterback.
Absolutely perfectly delivered by Rodney Peet.
Available on the iHeartRadio app or on AM570LASports.com.
This is Rogan and Rodney.
The Big Friday Show, Fred Rogan, Rodney Peet on AM 570 LA Sports. Right off the top, Rodney, I do want to mention that the Chargers had hoped to have a second interview with 49er defensive coordinator Robert Saleh.
Yeah.
Well, that's not going to take place because the Jets hired him.
Yeah.
So that's done. So even if that was the guy they were interested in, I know you don't want to move too quickly. You want to do your due diligence. But he is off the board, and he is headed now to the New York Jets. So that means the Chargers are still looking and apparently are in no rush to make a decision. I just found it interesting. You know, in a market where you're trying to make a splash, in a market where you're trying to get people to take notice, in a market where you're trying to create some buzz, and they announce we're going to bring this guy in for a second interview, and then he's gone. I don't know if that works.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm just saying.
Was he the guy that's going to make the splash?
I don't know.
So why? I mean, it happens. I mean, it's not like, oh my God, they let Bill Parcells go, or Urban Meyer was in there and they didn't move fast enough, and Jacksonville got him. I mean, it's not like they were. This guy was. He's a very good coach, and I think he'll do great things in New York, because I think he's an antithesis of Adam Gase. I think he's more intense, and I think he's going to bring some order to that team, which, by the way, they do have some talent on that team. And for them, it's going to be interesting to see what they do from an offensive coordinator standpoint to help with Sam Darnold, if Sam Darnold still is there. But that's not a major slap in the face for me to the Chargers going to bring him in for a second interview. And during that time, he got a job with the Jets. So it is. And they got to do their due diligence. And when hiring a head coach, I think you make too much of it's a splash. We got to make a splash instead of getting the right guy. Chip Kelly.
The name game.
Boom. Yeah.
Oh.
All right. Rams.
I think he'll do good. Let me finish this thought, Fred. I think he'll do good at UCLA. I really do. I think that eventually, as things get back to normal, he's more suited, I think, for college football than he is for the NFL. But two teams played the name game with him in Philadelphia and in San Francisco. But I think he'll do well. But yeah, you got to get the right guy, not just the splash.
Okay, let's do Rams Green Bay now, and tomorrow. Obviously, the Rams are side underdogs in that game. They should be. They're on the road. They're playing in the cold in Green Bay. When and they're off to the NFC Championship game. Here's the thing, Rodney, and you touched on it yesterday. So I think your perspective on this is very important when you look at Jared Goff. Now, Jared Goff has taken the Rams to the playoffs. You cannot dismiss that. We also have to acknowledge that he has really struggled this year and doesn't look like the guy he was in the past. Does that mean people have caught up to him? Does that mean he's hit a ceiling? Or does that mean guy simply had a bad year? Now, you touched on it yesterday. Do you think an awful lot about Jared Goff's future hinges on how he now plays in the playoffs?
Yeah, no, I do. I do. Nobody cares that, you know, he's got an injured thumb or just had surgery on his thumb a couple of weeks ago. It's when you're out on the field, that's how you're judged. And it's unfortunate because behind the scenes, and that's with anybody, nobody really cares. If you're actually playing, nobody's going to stop and say, he played bad because he's got a bad ankle or he's got a bad thumb or he's got a bad that. If you're healthy enough to play, then people expect you to play at a high level. That being said, I think it is. I think more so than any other game, this is a very, very important game for Jared Goff. because the fact that they started Wolford when he was healthy and enough to play at Seattle speaks volumes to me, and that they're not 100% sold that Jared Goff is their franchise guy going forward, even though they paid him. I think there's some questions about whether he is our guy. And so, yeah, if he goes out and stumbles and doesn't play well and has the turnovers like we've seen this season, I think a lot of things are going to be up in the air in the offseason for the Rams.
But could it be convenient for the Rams, given we don't really know how healthy he is? He's healthy enough to play. And you would say guys are banged up and dinged up every week in the NFL. And it doesn't get better. It only gets worse as the year goes on. But he did have thumb surgery. And we know how critical that is to a quarterback. Let's say he does not play well. Let's say he can't throw the ball, it's cold, whatever happens. Internally, do you think the Rams give him a mulligan, the organization, because of that injury? Is that a convenient way to say we're sticking with this guy for another year?
It is. If that's their kind of mindset to the public, is that, yeah, the guy, you know, the narrative could be he gutted it out and this guy just came off of surgery, gutted it out against Seattle and got us the win and had a tough go against Green Bay. But it shows what kind of heart he is. I mean, they can spin the narrative any way they want to, but they also can spin it the other way. You know, it could be we're going to throw Jared Goff out there and you know, we already ruled Wolford out, because we don't want him to look bad in Green Bay, because he's a guy that we think could be, you know, something that we can work with. So we're going to put Jared Goff back out there in Green Bay, and he could look very bad, and it gives us an excuse to move on from him. And I've seen a lot of things like that happen where, you know, teams and organizations put guys in bad positions to just set them up for failure, you know, and it's just not. It's not out of the possibility that any NFL club would do that.
But how do you move a guy making that much money?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough because you know if you were, there hasn't been a whole lot of changes, and we knew who Jared Goff was. We know who he is. He's not going to all of a sudden turn into Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. I mean, we know what you're going to get from him. And that's not saying he can't get better, but we kind of know. So they knew that before they paid him, and they paid him. And so as you like to say, Fred, now you got him.
Right.
Now you got him. And so you got to deal with it. But the fact that they're messing with the confidence and the psyche of him in that Seattle game leading up to it, and then during the game, it was a mental blow to Jared Goff. And I think internally when he goes home and sits and thinks about it, I've said this from my perspective, that I would have been pissed. Now, if I get in the game and I stink it up and it, you know, I can throw great in practice and I get in the game and something's going on and I can't make the throws that I thought I could make, and it's a bad situation and they got to pull me. Okay, I live with that. But if I'm healthy enough to play and I'm the starter for this team for the last 4 years, and you're going to tell me I'm not going to start the game, I'm pissed.
You know, maybe given what you just said, if you're Jared Goff and you're looking at your long-term future with the Rams, and given the kind of year he had, now obviously he believes that he's a starting quarterback and he can lead this team. And I guess you have to in that position. You know, it might have done him more good if he couldn't have played at all. Think about that. If he couldn't play
last week, you mean against Seattle?
Yeah, this week. Let's say he just, that thumb, the surgery, he was done. We'll see you next year. Maybe that helps his long-term future with the Rams more than if he goes out there and stinks up the place.
Are you saying if you're Jared Goff, you're letting them know that you're not really ready to go, and you let it play out with the other guy, so that then you could say, see, you do need me. You do need me. Right? Or so you're worth to the team when you're out, because who knows what happens against Seattle, right? If Wolford plays the whole game, say they lose that game, then yeah, he's got more of a case to say, I'm your guy. Same thing with this week. If he goes out and the Rams get blown out because the offense can't do anything, then it goes back to say, yeah, if we had Goff, we could have had a chance.
Yeah, but it's addition by subtraction. By not playing, he actually looks better.
Yeah.
Unless he goes out and plays well.
Right.
It's really a crossroads and a really fascinating subplot to the game that will be played tomorrow afternoon.
Just think about the offseason if he doesn't play well. I mean, and what hurts that, it's almost like, you know, what hurt the Clippers was the Lakers winning in town.
Right.
If he doesn't play well in the offseason, the talk will be the Rams had the number one defense in the league.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
How do you, all they need is a quarterback to play steady, and he wasn't able to do that. And so we have to move on. That is going to be the narrative next year. It's like we're a quarterback away from being really a Super Bowl winning team.
And if you are in any other market in the country, any other NFL market, that narrative would be played over and over and shit from the rooftops.
Yeah.
Here,
yeah,
you actually get a bit of a pass because it's not as fanatical in this market yet about the NFL.
Right.
You know, we came up short. We need a quarterback. Yeah, I guess they do. Okay, so what are the Dodgers doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But any other market in the country, anywhere, this would be top of the fold. People would be talking about it constantly. And he would actually feel worse than he might feel if it doesn't go well because he plays here.
No doubt. No, I think you're absolutely right. You know, you think about what it would be, you know, think how it is in Philadelphia now. Think about how it is, what's going on in Pittsburgh on talk radio. You know, Buffalo, Buffalo, Baltimore, it's sun up to sun down all about this playoff game, and that's all people can talk about. And here, it's almost like, oh yeah, the Rams play tomorrow. They play the Packers. That's right.
It's going to be about 80 degrees outside. So if we had a chance, maybe we'll catch a little of the game.
Yeah, I'll catch some highlights.
Yeah, let's see what happened. Go Rams. You know, it's really fascinating. The NFL has not done in this city what people had hoped it would do yet. But it is a long-term play. And if the Rams do, or the Chargers eventually, if they can win a Super Bowl or two, or always be in the conversation, suddenly they will grow a little more. There will be more interest in them simply by osmosis. They're here and yeah, they're successful. We got to check them out.
Well, they'll be at the, you know, I think the thing that hurt them a little bit this year, obviously it hurt everybody, but I think in particular the Rams opening up a new stadium and not having a crowd in there, because it is the new hot restaurant. It's the new hot nightclub that everybody wants to go to. It's the place to go. It's the place to be seen, which I think SoFi will be once people are able to go and be a part of that. I think it's just one of those places that it's is to go to see, to be seen, to see great events and things of that nature.
Like the Forum used to
be. The Forum used to be, you know, when it was better than any nightclub or restaurant, and you know, you see anybody you want to see. The atmosphere was great. It was full on entertainment, and I think the SoFi has that capability of doing that, and the Rams missed out on that. But it's gonna take some time. They gotta win it. They gotta win it, and they gotta win a Super Bowl or be in that conversation every single year, because as we see in this town, you're out of sight, out of mind, and you're secondly on the second tier from the Lakers and the Dodgers.
All right, best defense against best offense tomorrow. Packers best offense, Rams best defense. When it's all said and done, who you got?
Yeah, it's a long shot for the Rams. You know, the key for them is they gotta run the ball. Cam Akers has got to have a big day, and you know, Green Bay knows that too, and Green Bay has been better on defense. But I just think Green Bay at home in that comfortable environment, you know, weather can change, but it doesn't feel like it's going to be that, you know, as bad as it could be in January in Green Bay. But I just think Aaron Rodgers is just playing too well. And the Rams, they have to generate some offense because they're not going to get away with what they did against Seattle of, you know, Seattle wasn't going to put up a whole lot of points. And I say a whole lot of points on the Rams. I think Green Bay at minimum is going to put up 20, 21 points. And the Rams are going to have to match that. Their offense is going to have to score. And so that's going to be interesting. And God forbid the Rams get behind and trying to fight an uphill battle in Green Bay. The factor, Fred, is the defense, which is the number one defense, like you said, has to just be big. They just have to be opportunistic. And Aaron Rodgers, unfortunately, doesn't turn the ball over. You know, he's the opposite of Jared Goff. He does not turn the ball over. They don't beat themselves. And, you know, it's just defense has to be dominant in order for the Rams to win.
Okay, a couple of quick baseball notes here before we get to our Laker insider, Bill Orem. Cody Bellinger, $15 million. So that's done. Got a one-year deal. And moving closer to free agency. Also, DJ LeMahieu has agreed with the Yankees at 6 years, $90 million, about $15 million a year. Okay? So,
are you shocked by that?
No, not at all. Are you? Not one bit?
A little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I thought he would get more than that, I guess.
Oh, you mean the amount of money?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what he wanted made it seem like he would get more. I thought he was going to re-sign with the Yankees. I couldn't believe they'd let him go. And they were just playing hardball with him. You know, all right, go out there, see what you got. And if you got something more, come on back. And then when we heard that his agent said, well, you know, he's not pleased with the Yankees. Well, he's not pleased with the Yankees because the Yankees weren't giving him what he wanted because he wasn't getting it anywhere else.
Right.
That's why he wasn't pleased with the Yankees. But I was pretty much of the opinion that he'd stay in New York. They couldn't let him go. So that's done. So that
I just thought, you know, because he was the name right out there, right? He was the big name that people were talking about to get, and now we're, because we even had the argument, you're going to pay LeMahieu $25 million or Justin Turner $15 million, you know, and now he ends up getting the $15 million. And so I was a little shocked by the number.
But what that tells you, and what it brings us to, is Justin Turner now, when you look at it from the Dodgers. You know, the Dodgers lost Pedro Baez to the Astros. They lost Alex Wood to the Giants. Good luck to him. Farhan Zaidi obviously loves him. Because
that traitor.
That's okay. Go.
traitor.
Knock yourself out. Get up there. Have fun. For $3 million. So now that brings you to Justin Turner. Think about this for a second. If DJ LeMahieu didn't get what you thought he would get, what he wanted on the open market, and maybe it's because of the pandemic and the uncertainty and baseball losing money. If, in fact, he didn't get what he wanted, how can Justin Turner justify, I'm holding out, or if I don't get what I want, I'll go somewhere else? What he wants, quite frankly, may not be available, given what we just saw with LeMahieu.
Yeah, if you're Justin Turner, you can't say, well, just because LeMahieu did what LeMahieu did, I'm now stuck in that pigeonhole with him. You got to look at yourself as an individual and say, this is what I've done for the Dodgers. This is what I think I can still do. It's just been the time. You know, it's a bad time to be, you know, in the last couple of years, free agency. Mookie Betts hit it at the right time. And, Manny Machado and those guys, when those, you know, Gerrit Cole, when those salaries and those contracts were being done, they hit it at the perfect timing, because as we've seen, it's been the slowest molasses in terms of big time free agent signings. There's no urgency, and the money is not there because there's uncertainty of what the future may hold, at least the immediate future of the finances and the revenue. So it's just you hit it at the wrong time in terms of free agency. But I don't think you can, if you're Justin Turner, can compare yourself to LeMahieu. The only problem is there going to be somebody out there that's going to give you a little bit of a competition for the Dodgers that's going to, you know, make him an offer?
Yeah. So we're a month away from the start of spring training. And we don't know where spring training will be. I've not heard. I don't know if you have. Are they going to do it at Camelback Ranch in Arizona, where things are pretty bad too? or will they do it out here at Dodger Stadium? Seems to me.
Yeah, I don't know.
You would do it here.
You would think.
Yeah.
Right? You would think, but how does that play out when you've got to do spring training and traveling? Are you just going to play the California teams, multiple times, and not do that? You know, the beauty of Florida and Arizona is that everybody's there, so it's a quick drive or quick walk to the other team's facility, and you play multiple games. But if you're doing spring training here, it feels like it might be just more inter squad, and then you don't want to play the Padres 10 times in spring training either, you know? So it'll be interesting how that works out, but I just think it's dangerous to bring everybody to Arizona like normal and do spring training there.
Two other things, and they're talking about this. First, maybe keeping the DH this year. Everybody seems to like that idea. If you do that, the players would like you to add a 26th player, which I think you should to the roster. I like the idea of the DH, hated it originally, loved the old National League strategy, but given that it plays perfectly into the Dodgers' plans, it works great.
Let me ask you this. Does it help Justin Turner if that decision gets made?
Yes.
Or the fact that they're even talking about that, does that change the Dodgers' philosophy? Because obviously that would be the best scenario for the Dodgers if the DH is implemented again, say they do it for the next year, and then maybe it keeps going to the next couple of years, because he's a perfect candidate to be that DH for the Dodgers.
It would
the way they kind of played him and used him last year.
Yeah, it worked perfectly for him. It couldn't be better news for Justin Turner. Yeah. You want a 4-year deal? We think you'll still be able to hit. No problem.
Right.
Yeah. You know, we're not going to pay as much at the end of the deal, but you're still on the team. You're still getting paid, and you're a valuable contributor. Yeah, I think that works in his favor. Other thing is this. They're talking about the expanded playoffs again. Kicking that around maybe keeping it the way it was last season. I, of course, was in the minority because I love it. Now, I don't like, you play all these games and then you can be out in 10 seconds when you get there. But I like
incentive to win a division.
Right, I know. I know that's the issue.
The format's got to be different. I mean, I don't mind the expansion, but you can't win the division, play 100, especially if you're playing. I get it. Last year, you played, 60 games?
Yeah.
But this year, they're talking about going ahead with 162 games. You're going to play 162 games, and you win the division. You work hard. I mean, there should be some incentive for not tanking, not saying you're tanking, but taking days off, taking games off, for going out there playing and winning the division. And then you could be ousted in two games. It just doesn't make sense.
As of right now, it looks like MLB wants a 14-team playoff where the top team would get a bye. That's what they're looking for, not necessarily the 16 like we had this past year. All that still needs to be negotiated, but they do want that extra playoff money in exchange for the DH. So this is part of the negotiation process that comes up next year on the CBA, but there's talk about them possibly doing it this year. So
they
we'll
should
see.
Do it. They should do both this year. Shouldn't even be a negotiation.
Well, especially if it's coming anyway, why not?
Yeah, get it done. I mean, because if you play more playoff games, I assume the playoff share will be higher for the players as well, right? More money in.
And the players want more jobs, which is what the DH in both leagues would get. So that's the give and take on both.
Yeah, I say go for it. Laker insider Bill Orem will stop by. You know, with everything going on in the league, game postponements, players sitting out because of COVID, it's not the first time in the NBA the teams have had to play shorthanded.
Hogan and Rodney.
Rodney Peace.
An athlete.
Rodney Peace.
A father.
Rodney Peace.
An LA icon.
Rodney Peace.
And this guy.
Red Rogan.
Boo!
AM 570 LA Sports.
Happy Friday, Rodney Peace, Fred Rogan coming at ya. Big weekend in sports, Freddie.
Weekend. Huge weekend. By the way, we're going to play a little Know Your Squad. We'll do that at about 12:45. So when we give you the cue to call, you want to jump on today and play Rodney and Colin. Colin's it for Adam. Colin, good to see you.
Good to see you, Fred.
All right, so Colin will be in. And Colin's good at this, so you'll have a chance.
Colin is good at this.
Yeah, he is.
He's also good at the haikus.
Oh, I'm so glad he's here to wrap up the week so he can interpret today's haiku too.
Hi.
Thank you. All right, now let's bring on our Laker insider, Bill Orme. Bill, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are we today?
Well, we are fine, Bill. How are you?
I am fine, too. Just looking forward to the weekend. I mean, even though it has felt like a 10-month weekend, it's still nice to finally reach Friday.
Absolutely. Now, you know, with COVID going on around the league right now and guys missing games and games being postponed if need be, this is not the first time in the NBA that teams have had to play shorthanded. You wrote about this, didn't you? The Lakers back in 2014?
Yeah, guys. So my first year covering the Lakers was the year that the Lakers ran out of players in a game in Cleveland against the Cavaliers. And if anyone remembers it, they probably remember it for Chris Kaman laying out on the bench, stretching his 7-foot frame on the empty bench, because the Lakers went into that game with 8 players. And then Nick Young hurt his knee. Jordan Farmar strained his calf. Chris Kaman fouled out. So they were down to 5. And then with 3.5 minutes left, Robert Sacre, if you remember him, committed his 6th foul. So now they were down to 4 eligible players, and nobody knew what had happened or what would happen next. Turns out there's an obscure rule that had only ever been used once in the NBA in history that allows the last guy to foul out to stay in the game. His team has to take a technical foul and would be assessed a technical foul for every additional foul he commits. It had never really happened in that way. The only time that rule had ever been invoked was 3 years earlier in a game involving the Warriors with 4 seconds left. So it was totally inconsequential. The Lakers were in a 10-point game, you know, on the road, you know, 2 very bad teams. It didn't matter in the grand scheme of things. But, you know, and they had to try to hold on with a guy on the floor who anytime he touched somebody was going to get a technical foul. Really, really wild times.
And didn't you also say something about Steve Nash in the locker room?
Oh, gosh, God. What was fun about this was I got to talk to everybody who was involved. And the equipment manager at the time was this guy, Carlos Maples. Los was with the team for, you know, 20 years, you know, part of a lot of championship runs. And Gary Vitti, the trainer, actually sent Carlos Maples back to the locker room to get Steve Nash, who was not in uniform. He'd played the night before and wasn't playing in back-to-backs at the time. So Carlos Maples goes back and storms in the locker room. It's like, Nash, put your uniform on. Nash is sitting there eating, you know, pizza with the rest of the injured guys in the locker room waiting for the game to end. He hops up, and Carlos is going through the bags trying to find Nash's uniform. And there's actually pictures of Nash on the bench in uniform at the end of the game because he came sprinting out thinking he was going to have to check into the game.
A very different time then.
All of this is to say that there is precedent for teams playing with just 8 players, and the Lakers showed us in 2014 what can go wrong when you try to play a game with only 8 players.
Yeah, I don't see that happening anymore for the Lakers. Not with LeBron James there keeping an eye on everybody, Bill.
I mean, that's one thing that, you know, to bring it home, I mean, the one thing the Lakers have talked about is they want to be the best in the league in following these COVID protocols. You know, they think that they can have a competitive advantage over the rest of the league if they can keep, you know, their guys, you know, healthy, avoid the virus, and, you know, keep a full roster. And it's really early. They've got a big road trip coming up ahead that, you know, certainly seems, you know, it has alarm bells going off in my head about avoiding COVID on the road, 7 games, 7 cities. But, you know, up to this point, the Lakers have had only one player who missed time due to the health and safety protocols, and that was Alex Caruso. He missed 5 games. But other than that, I mean, they've been among the most spared teams in the league so far.
Yeah, they've done it. They've done it right, and they, you know, their record speaks for itself in terms of winning on the road. But as we're seeing across the country that this is it's getting worse before it gets better. Are there any kind of plans in place, Bill, that maybe, you know, you can have a couple of few guys on standby just in case there's an outbreak and a team, you know, falls from having, you know, 14 players or 15 or 17 players down to 8 players for a particular night, they can call on somebody or a particular week?
So that's not in place yet. But that's something that you've heard people talk about, where there should be a reserve pool of players who are going through testing and are basically at the ready to join a team in need, you know, kind of mercenary type players. you know, right now, I mean, teams have expanded rosters. They have, you know, all their guys are, you know, in uniform and eligible on a given night. So it's even more players than normal who have to be healthy or that you have active who can play. But, you know, there is talk of should they go up to 20 active players? Should they expand those rosters just for the very reason you're talking about? But there's a flip side to that. Now you're bringing three more people into your program, and you're increasing the number of you know, people who could possibly, you know, be viral vectors and who could, you know, whose own, you know, experiences in life you're bringing into the locker room. So it increases your risk, in a sense, to protect yourselves from risk. So it's a bit of a catch-22 for the league.
Okay, Bill, so the Lakers have New Orleans tonight. And obviously they did very well after they just caused Houston to wave the white flag, say no mas, and blew up the whole franchise. So congratulations to the Lakers. They finished the Rockets in James Harden's era there. Then they took care of Oklahoma City. But now the schedule gets a little tougher, doesn't it?
Yeah, finally some matchups that really kind of get your juices pumping a little bit more than what we've seen over the last few weeks. I mean, you know, New Orleans is a team on the rise. Everybody's excited about Brandon Ingram was most improved player last year. Zion Williamson, you know, finally kind of getting a full season in. You know, the Pelicans team that competes and has, you know, has a lot of talent. And, you know, for the Lakers, it's a chance to see guys that, you know, in an alternate universe could still be here, right? I mean, there's a lot of former Lakers on that Pelicans team, obviously. You know, they had to go to make way for Anthony Davis, but you know, it's an intriguing matchup. Certainly, something you could see in the playoffs, in like a 1-8 type series. And then, you know, going forward, I mean, it's Golden State on Martin Luther King Day. You know, we haven't seen the Warriors, we haven't seen Steph Curry in a really long time, and then they hit the road and immediately play Milwaukee to kick off that road trip. So, you know, the Lakers have been absolutely dominant up to this point in the season. They've been, you know, that even better than advertised, if that can be possible. But the reality is, I mean, they haven't had that tough of a schedule. Their toughest game was opening night against the Clippers, and they lost that. So this is going to test their mettle a little bit. You know, I think it's going to, you know, not that they've been sleepwalking up to this point in the season, but they've certainly not needed to turn it up all the way. And to beat a team like Milwaukee, which has been the best team in the East so far, they're going to need to take it to another level. So I'm excited to see those matchups that we've kind of been waiting for.
I thought about tonight's game. When you think about it, the only guy I wish the Lakers still would have had after that deal was Brandon Ingram. Everybody else, good for you down there in New Orleans. But Brandon Ingram was the guy, in hindsight, is the guy I wish they would have kept.
Well, and I think the Lakers, you know, there was some talk at the time, oh, should the Lakers include Kuzma or Ingram? And if you look at it through that lens, I mean, there's really no question. And Brandon Ingram always had a more unique and multifaceted game than Kyle Kuzma, but Kuz had a little bit more of a defined role on a Lakers team with Anthony Davis and LeBron than Brandon Ingram would have. I don't think that deal was getting done without Brandon Ingram. You know, he was, you know, when LeBron was out, you saw his value. When LeBron had that groin injury 2 years ago, Brandon Ingram really played like a superstar. Until he then had his own health scare. If you remember, he had that deep vein thrombosis that ended his season prematurely. So nobody really knew the health of Brandon Ingram at that point. But it was pretty understood that, you know, if not an all-star caliber player, he was going to be close to it. And then, of course, he does become an all-star in his first year in New Orleans and now looks, you know, like a guy who will be a perennial all-star for the Pelicans. So, you know, you've got to give to receive in this league, as it were. And I think it was understood by both teams that Brandon Ingram was the best player in that trade, not named Anthony Davis.
Yeah. Bill, before we let you go, I just want to get your take on the soap opera in Brooklyn.
Yeah. Oh, that's all you want to do. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. I thought there was like going to be more to the question.
No,
but it's like, no,
no,
it's like,
I just want to get your take on it because obviously, you know, it's a crazy story. James Harden, the whole deal,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Coming to camp and then going to Brooklyn, and then Kyrie is AWOL and who knows what's going on with him. I mean, what's your take on all that?
I mean, my take on it is that it's certainly worth a shot from the Nets, right? I mean, they're obviously all in. You know, there's a great history between Kevin Durant and James Harden. So that, you know, you expect that to work. You know, the wild card is Kyrie. does he want to be there? Does he want to be playing basketball? You know, all indications are he's going to come back this weekend after, you know, his 5-day quarantine for violating the COVID rules. We've seen James Harden coexist with other ball handlers. You know, that worked really well with Chris Paul. It almost got them to the finals. It worked less well with Russell Westbrook, but I think it worked better than people anticipated going into that season. So I tend to think that it's going to be a successful on-court marriage. I worry about the Nets defensively. Like, I cannot imagine who on that team would guard Anthony Davis in a playoff series if they got to the finals. Jeff Green, Kevin Durant, like, those do not seem like guys who I'm worried about Anthony Davis being able to score on in the post. So I think that they've got some shortcomings in that regard, but I mean, they're going to be able to score. I mean, this is a team that's going to play, you know, 7 seconds or less style offense. You know, Mike D'Antoni's there. Steve Nash is there. They're going to push the ball. They're going to score in bunches. It's just going to be a question of whether they can stop anyone else from scoring, I think.
All right. Bill, thanks for coming on. Always a pleasure. Have a terrific weekend.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
All right, who is ready?
Who wants some?
Little Know Your Squad.
Never lost.
866-987-2570. Whoever calls in first. Kevin will pick up the phone and put you on the air. You're going to play against Rodney and Colin today.
And now another Rogan and Rodney.
Oh, yeah!
Afternoon Delight.
Let's go. Hadn't heard from these guys in a while. Ready? Today's Afternoon Delight is The Bandit by Kings of Leon. This is one of two songs that the Nashville-based rock band released last week as they prepare to drop their latest album entitled When You See Yourself. The project will be the band's first album in 5 years following the release of their 2016 project entitled Walls. Again, today's Afternoon Delight is The Bandit by Kings of Leon.
Hey, Rodney.
Yes.
I want to give a shout out to Bill Oram, who was just on. And I should have mentioned it, but I really want to because it's really good. He's doing a podcast now called the Forum Club Podcast for the Athletic.
Yeah.
You know how witty he is on the air with us.
Right.
Imagine listening to his podcast. So Bill Oram is doing that. Check it out. Bill Oram, Forum Club Podcast.
Rogan and Rodney Roulette. Know Your Squad.
Hey, this afternoon at 5:25, join our buddy Eric Dickerson with Petros and Money, brought to you by the Ford F-150, best-selling full-size pickup in California. Visit your local Southern California Ford dealers today or go to iFordNow.com and schedule a test drive. All right. Our buddy Joe. Joe in L.A., you ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready. Fred, we caught that double entendre. You tried to slip by us, Fred, yesterday.
Which one was that?
It was about the trade for Harden come to the Nets with Garnett and Kyrie Irving. You said, well, a lot depends. Will the Nets have enough balls to make this work? We see you, Fred. You ain't lit.
Just make it a statement of fact, Joe.
We said,
okay.
Just statement of fact.
Fred, come on.
Come on. All right.
You slipped that by the FCC, huh, Fred?
You know what? It just came up. I think it's a fair question. A lot of guys like to shoot. A lot of guys like to have the ball in their hands. Are they going to have enough balls? That's all I meant, Joe.
Yes, sure it is.
Colin, you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, here we go. It's Know Your Clippers. Wait till you have all the answers before you shout it out. Shout it out too soon.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, I know. And it's bad because it's Know Your Clippers. But remember this. You shout it out too soon, you're locked out. So good luck. Clippers eliminated the Mavericks in Game 6 of their first-round playoff series in August. Kawhi Leonard led the Clippers in scoring with 33 points. Who was tied with Paul George for second in scoring for the Clippers with 15 points? Was it Marcus Morris, Ivica Zubac, Lou Williams, Reggie Jackson, or Jesse Jackson?
Lou Williams.
It is no
good. Lou Williams.
No,
Reggie Jackson.
Marcus Morris.
Marcus Morris.
And it is no good.
Wow, who else is there?
Ivica Zubac.
Boom.
Yeah.
Colin.
Yeah.
Ivica Zubac. I found it interesting that all three of you, I think, said Lou Williams after each other.
Yeah.
Lou Williams. And here's the thing.
Trez wasn't even in there.
Yeah, but here's a tip for the game. And I usually don't like to give these out, but I feel like being in a generous mood today.
Oh, Lord.
If one guy says Lou Williams and it's wrong, if you also say Lou Williams, it will be wrong.
Freddie, we don't all say it at the same time. It happened to be bang, 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 bang. You know, Lou Williams. It wasn't like we listened to.
How was it?
I didn't listen to Joe. Joe didn't listen to me and say, oh, Rodney said Lou Williams. Let me say Lou Williams, too. Didn't go that way, Fred. Come on, man.
How did they say Lou Williams again?
It was a thing called delay, Fred.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have a delay, Joe. When you're on with us, you're on in real time. Here's the next one. Doc Rivers has the highest wedding percentage in team history at 631. Who has the second best wedding percentage in Clippers/Braves history at 557? Larry Brown, Vinny Del Negro, The Good Doctor, Dr. Jack Ramsey, Gene Shue, or Elizabeth Shue?
Vinny Del Negro.
Larry Brown.
Vinny Del Negro, Rodney. Rodney right in there. All right.
Vinny D.
Yep. And, you know, that was sad when he was fired. He had done a good job with them. Vinny Del Negro did a really good job.
I thought so, too.
You know what I find interesting? He didn't get another head coaching job.
No, he didn't.
And he did a nice job with the Clippers.
Did you want one?
He was there for... Yeah, he did. I know he's talked to people about it. He was there for Lob City. All right. Who holds the franchise record for steals averaged per game at 2.2? Is it Chris Paul, Ron Harper, Mark Jackson, Marco Yarich, or Marco Polo?
Chris Paul.
Chris Paul is correct.
Rodney.
Kevin?
I have to check the tape.
Rodney?
Yeah.
What, Joe?
I was saying Chris before Rodney even said anything.
Oh, stop it. Stop it, Joe.
Joe, I got to be honest with you. I think you were last
after Colin.
Yeah, I think it was Colin and Rodney. I don't even think you were in there.
Yeah, Joe.
All right, we got the tape. Wait, Joe.
All right, we have the tape. Let's hear it.
Marco Yarich or Marco Polo?
Chris Paul.
Rodney.
Rodney, easily.
Oh, easily, Joe. Yeah. Come on, man.
Joe, what?
Don't be that guy, Joe.
Yeah, what are you saying, Joe?
I'm not, okay. All right. Delay. Okay. All right.
There's no delay. Mm-hmm. There is no delay.
All right.
Come on, Joe.
If you're listening on the air, there's a delay. If you're listening on the phone and you're on the air, there's no delay. The delay.
I've heard myself on the phone. Oh, okay. All right.
You've heard yourself when you've listened back on the radio, but you've not heard yourself when you're on the phone with us because that's real time. The delay is in your brain. It's not firing fast enough. I don't think I've ever heard Joe speechless.
Joe, are you going to ask for a recount after this?
No.
Okay, good.
All right, here's the next one.
This is the Clippers.
Oh. Clippers won a franchise worst. 9 games during the lockout shortened 98-99 season. How do you only win 9 games? Good God.
There was only 15 games.
That had to be it. Who was their leading scorer that year? That infamous, nefarious season. Lamond Murray, Eric Piatkowski, Michael Olowokandi, Maurice Taylor, or Maria Taylor?
Lamond Murray.
Maurice Taylor.
No good!
Michael Olowokandi.
Joe.
Michael
Maurice. Candy.
Joe got it. Maurice Taylor. You're on the board, Joe.
Wow. Way to go, Joe.
Okay.
All right, so what does that mean? That means we're down to the final one. Oh, my God, Joe. This is mind-boggling. Given your performance, which has not been very good, you can tie Rodney today. You can tie him. And Colin, so can you. Rodney, if you get it, you win. Good luck to all.
Thank you.
The Clippers beat the Knicks in their home opener in their inaugural season in Los Angeles in 1984. Think back.
Yes.
Who was their leading scorer in that game? Bill Walton.
We're saying 1984.
Correct.
Are you saying 84?
84.
Okay.
1984.
Okay.
George Orwell.
Locked out.
Did you answer?
No. That was a joke. That was not an answer.
Well, here's the problem. We're gonna let you slide, but if it was a joke, it wasn't very funny.
Neither was Otto and Fred.
Oh, then. That was good. You redeemed yourself. That was pretty good. Okay. So, here's the question. The Clippers beat the Knicks in their home opener in their inaugural season in Los Angeles in 84. Rodney, the year was 1984.
Yes.
Who was their leading
scorer? War of the Worlds.
1984.
Okay.
Who was their leading scorer in that game? Bill Walton, Norm Nixon?
The game or that season?
That game.
Oh, against the Knicks.
Yes, in 1984.
Okay.
This is gamesmanship on Rodney's part, you see. Trying to confuse everybody.
He's looking it up.
He's going to Google.
No. Hands right here. Fred can see me.
Okay. Here we go. Who was their leading scorer in that game? Bill Walton, Norm Nixon, Marcus Johnson, Michael Cage, or Luke Cage?
Norm Nixon.
Marcus Johnson.
Rodney wins. Norm Nixon. His hands were up. He was not Googling anything, and I can see him. So there you go, Rodney. Congratulations.
Norman. Yes.
Good effort today. Really, Colin? Nice job by you as well.
Not bad.
Thank you.
Not bad.
I mean, Rodney was on fire. Joe,
I love you, man. You're a regular with us, man. I appreciate you listening, but you had an awful lot of whining today, Joe. What's going on?
Okay. All right, Rodney.
I love you, Joe, but you did. You were a lot of complaining going on today, Joe. What's going on?
I don't know. I've been reading a lot of Oscar Robertson lately, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
All right, Joe. Well, listen, have a terrific weekend, all right?
Yeah, we'll try.